This is episode 50 of Social Entrepreneur with Tom Osborne of GreenChar.
For example, it started with my family, then my neighbors, then my neighbor's neighbor, and then their neighbors.
Welcome to the Social Entrepreneur Podcast. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former business executive with Fortune 500 companies. Today, I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, we bring you exciting stories from the world of social entrepreneurs, benefit corporations, and impact investing. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to episode 50 of Social Entrepreneur with Tom Osborne of GreenChar. Now, I saved this milestone date. This is episode 50. I saved this specifically for Tom Osborne. There are so many things to love about Tom. So one thing is that Tom is a Kenyan that is providing solutions for other Kenyans. And he's growing beyond Kenya and soon will be in other countries. But I love that this is a native-born solution to their own problems. I also love that Tom started when he was 17 years old, and all he was trying to do was solve a pain point in his own life, and he'll tell you about that. But he ended up with a business, and we hear this story a lot on here, don't we? The other thing about Tom is he was not only just trying to solve a problem for himself, but he found this to be a really massive problem and a massive business opportunity. Now, Tom is a little bit soft-spoken, so you're going to have to lean in a little bit and listen carefully, but he just has so many great things to share with us. So here he is, Tom Osborne of GreenChar.
My name is Tom Osborne, founder and CEO of GreenChar.
What is GreenChar?
GreenChar is a social enterprise that makes alternative cooking fuel and distributes clean cookstoves for families in rural and urban slums in Kenya.
And you're distributing clean cook stoves?
We distribute both clean cook stoves and also alternative cooking fuel for these stoves.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about where this idea came from. You know, you're a fairly young man. Are you 20 years old? Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And so is this your first startup?
I'd say it's my first startup. Ideas that never meant it to the startup first.
Right.
So it's a startup, yeah.
Right. And so where did this idea come from?
Oh, so it's a very long story. I was born and raised in rural Kenya. And growing up as a young boy in rural Kenya, I experienced firsthand, you know, the effects of cooking with traditional fuels. You know, most families in Africa cook with firewood or wood charcoal, and so they have to either collect this by cutting down trees, or they have to buy it from vendors, and then they use it on very traditional and unclean cook stoves. So as a young boy, I used to help my mom around, and so one of the tasks that I was given was to be lighting the family stove. And so as I was doing this, I did not enjoy this task. And I, you know, look forward to it because it was very tedious and very dirty and unhealthy. And when I was 16 years old, my mom was diagnosed with a respiratory infection as a result of cooking with firewood.
Tom, is that a fairly common experience that people have respiratory infections and respiratory problems from cooking with firewood?
Yes. So in Kenya, for example, we have 18,000 people who die annually as a result of this. According to the World Health Organization, they estimate that 4.3 million people in sub-Saharan Africa and Asia also die as a result of this, making it the third highest killer, only behind, you know, alcohol and tuberculosis in the world. So it's a very fairly common thing in Kenya.
So it's even higher than the incidence of malaria and AIDS. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's much higher than that. But then there's not a lot of awareness that has been done about it. So most people don't know that it is as a result of the fuels that they used to cook. They think that perhaps they've just developed maybe an allergy that has caused the respiratory infection, but most often than not, it's a direct result of the fuel that they used to cook.
Right. And where does the wood and the charcoal come from then that's usually used for fires?
Typically, it's from cutting down trees. So we have an extensive forest cover in this country, and so every year we lose at least 50,000 hectares of forest cover directly because of charcoal and firewood. So we have vendors who go to these forests, they cut down these trees, and then they make it into charcoal, and then they resell it in these villages and in these small towns.
Do you know what the size of that market is? How many dollars worth the cooking fuel industry is in Kenya?
It's It's worth $500 million in Kenya. $500 million
Are you saying dollars, not shillings?
Yeah, $500 million in Africa. It's a $10 billion industry.
$10 billion. That's an addressable market size that could get people's interest. But you had this experience where your mom was not well. And let me just ask you this. Has she since recovered?
She's improved, but she still has to regularly go to the hospital.
Wow. So this is a fairly common problem. It's a big problem. It's a large addressable market. So what? And you were a teenager at the time?
Yes, I started Green Journey when I was 17.
When you were 17 years old, so you were in high school at the time. Is that right?
Yeah, I was in high school in my senior year, my last year in high school. And so I challenged myself to make a difference, you know, initially just for my mom. And so that's when, you know, I started working on trying to find an alternative safe cooking fuel for my mom. You know, initially, I never envisioned myself, you know, as a social entrepreneur or running a business, you know, out of it. You know, what I wanted to do was just to solve a problem that had affected me as an individual.
That is such a great way to start a business. I hear this a lot, that, you know, sometimes these things start just as a project, right? We don't even know they're going to be a business, or they just start as, I have a problem and I'm just trying to fix it. So at what point did you realize that this was a business opportunity?
So as I was working on the project, I got a co-founder, and we signed up for a business incubator competition where the grand prize was $3,000. So I signed up for this competition when I was still 17, towards the end of my high school. And we ended up winning this $3,000. So I was taken aback, you know, that the organizers of the competition and the judges, you know, had seen, you know, some business potential in this project to be able to award it $3,000, which is a lot of money in Kenya, you know, and especially if you're a 17-year-old. And then I realized that there was potential, but I was not yet convinced. You know? And what really convinced me that there was the potential to make a business out of this was when we started doing the project actually at my home. And we were able to get interest, you know, from neighbors who were interested in what you're doing and wanted to try out and use the field at their home. And so initially I'd give it out for free, you know, but then I realized that that was not sustainable and these people are willing to pay money right. to actually use this field, yeah.
Right. And were you, at the time, you have a stove and you have an alternative fuel, right?
No, at the time, I only had an alternative fuel. I didn't have a stove yet.
Okay. And so you had neighbors that were saying, hey, I'd like to have some of this fuel. So what is this alternative fuel made out of? What do you do there?
So we collect sugarcane waste from sugar mills. So 80% of Kenya's GDP and Kenyans depend on agriculture. So most people in this country are farmers, and one of the crops that they farm is sugarcane. And my parents, my dad is also a sugarcane farmer. So what we do is we collect sugarcane waste, and then we process it by, you know, burning it under high temperature, high pressure and limited oxygen for about 48 hours. So as we do this, in this process, we are able to, you know, take out approximately 90% of the, you know, bad smoke emissions that would have otherwise come from directly burning the sugarcane as it is. After this process, we add a few additives to the fuel to make sure that it can be able to burn long and it can be easily combustible. And then we press it now into a ball, like a briquette that looks like a briquette. And then after we do this, we then package it and we now resell it.
Mm. And what would happen to that sugarcane waste if you weren't utilizing it to make the briquettes?
Right now, two things happen to the sugarcane waste. One, we have landfills of sugarcane waste next to sugar mills, so we have huge mountains of sugarcane waste that is not used. And second, the farmers directly burn the sugarcane waste in their farm, and this even further pollutes the environment.
Right. And so when you obtained the sugarcane waste, the first time you went to a mill somewhere and you said, I'd like to have some of your sugarcane waste, or did you just pull up in a cart and a truck and whatever and just fill it up and go away with it?
No. Initially, you know, we had to start small because right. you know, we were not sure if we could get enough people who are interested. So we went to the sugar mill and we told them we were doing a project, and we took a few kilograms, like 100 kilograms, of the sugar cane waste, and we actually carried it through sacks and a cart. They're like this. Cuts that are pulled by human beings.
Right.
Yeah.
Do the sugar mills, do they charge you to take that away, or are they just glad to get rid of it?
So initially, they were very glad that we were getting rid of it. But last year, you know, they noticed that we were starting to make some money off it. Now we have a long-term contract with them whereby we pay them around $4 per metric ton.
Mm. So you were trying this at home, and then your neighbors wanted some, and you had gone through one contest that had given you enough capital that you could build the processing facility, or at least a small scale processing facility. So I have a couple of questions. Then one question is, how did you get your first, let's say, 100 customers?
Well, that's a very interesting question. So what happened was we mainly got them through word of mouth referrals, you know. So it was like a chain effect, a ripple effect. So, for example, it started with my family, then my neighbors, then my neighbor's neighbor, and then their neighbors. So that's how we initially, you know, started rolling out. So it was from one specific community where we started, and so after someone used it, and then you talk to your neighbor about it, and then they become curious, and then they buy it. that's how we were able to initially start.
Right. And didn't you go through an incubator process or an accelerator process or maybe more than one? So what happened there?
I've been quite lucky in my career, you know, as a social entrepreneur. In 2014, I got the Equine Green Fellowship, which is one of the prestigious fellowships to get as a social entrepreneur. And I also went through Fledge, which is a conscious company accelerator. And so what that did for me, because I'm a first-time entrepreneur, I've not gone to college and have no prior experience managing or running a business. It was great for me to go through an accelerator program where I worked with leading mentors were able to train me on what it means to actually start and run a social business, and were also able to help me understand how to like build my business to the next level, which has been very crucial for me because it helped me get a solid foundation that I can now lean upon as I continue working at Greencha.
Right. And, you know, being an entrepreneur, especially a startup, and especially, you know, with a new kind of technology, now in this case, it's a technology around fuel, but you have a new kind of technology here. And being a startup seems to be the fastest way to scale your impact. So you started with, you know, I want to have an impact on my mom and my home and make safer fuel and less smoke in the home. And then you had impact on your neighbors, and then you had impact on your neighbors' neighbors. But somewhere in there, you had the opportunity to go to these accelerators / incubators in these fellowship programs. And so you had a chance to meet with mentors, and you had a chance to meet with funders and people who could invest in your business. And I think that one of the keys, one of the interesting things I'm thinking about is startups. The thing that make the difference between a small business and a startup is growth. And you know, a small business is interesting, but a startup, as we think about them in this kind of world, it's scalable and it's investable. And so, at what point did you think, you know, I have more than just a small business? What I have is a scalable, investable company.
I think in my case, the point when I realized that we are doing at Greencha is not only scalable but also investable was when I fully understood the market size, and I fully understood that people are interested in what we are doing, because you may have a good product that you intend to have social benefit on people's life and also the environment, but if these people themselves don't appreciate your product and don't buy into it, then you don't have any business case. So in our case, we reached a point whereby the demand for what we are doing was exceeding what we could produce as an organization. And so when we had this problem, it made me realize that we were onto something here, and that we had the capacity to turn this into a very profitable social business.
Right. So how do you go about, so you acquire the raw material from the sugar cane. You talked about your process. Have you like built and expanded your facility a few times?
Yeah, so when I started, we started with $3,000. And so with $3,000, we could only make 10 kilograms of fuel every day. That's only enough for five homes. And so we've been expanding and iterating from there till in the last year, February, when we opened a much bigger production facility, that now can produce 1,000 kilograms a day.
Excellent.
And has the capacity to expand up to 2,000 kilograms and now employs 10 people at the site. Yeah.
Wow. And how do you distribute the green char product then?
We have three distribution models that we use. So the first model that we use is we tap into the existing charcoal ecosystem. So we work with vendors who are already selling charcoal and have already developed relationships with the direct consumers of charcoal. And so we convince them to sell our product alongside whatever they're selling currently. That's one of the ways that we sell. The second way is we work through resellers. So there are organizations and individuals who can buy from us in bulk and then resell to the end consumer and make some margin. So we also work through them. And the third model that we use, we have our own micro-franchises, which we call Green Char kiosks. So these are small energy kiosks that cost about $150 to set up and are run by mostly women micro-entrepreneurs in urban slums and in rural Kenya. And so they sell our fuel, they sell cookstoves, and then they sell basic essential commodities.
Wow. And the so that's very interesting about the micro entrepreneurs. I was thinking a little earlier, there used to be, you know, I mean, you're sort of displacing some industries in a way because and you hope to completely displace them probably. But it used to be that, you know, people would cut down trees and then they had a burning process and they had this process where they were producing charcoal. And some of those people, you're a direct competitor. So are you seeing some of those sort of micro entrepreneurs that used to cut down trees and make charcoal in that way become micro entrepreneurs distributing your product?
We've had a few cases of that on the distribution side. So people who used to distribute charcoal, but not necessarily manufacture charcoal. We have experienced people, micro-entrepreneurs who cut down trees and burn them and make charcoal, see us as a threat and as competition. But right now, they're not really concerned because what we are producing at 1,000 kilograms a day is a tiny dot in the sea. For example, in Nairobi, which is the capital of Kenya, we consume roughly 100,000 kilograms of charcoal every day. And a green char can only produce 1,000 kilograms a day, of which we don't distribute all of this to Nairobi. So the people who manufacture and distribute to Nairobi, they still don't see us to be big enough to pose a direct challenge to them. But it's created some friction, for example, and we've faced instances where a few of these manufacturers have been convincing the distributors not to stock our products, for example, and telling them if they stock our products, they lose certain privileges, mm-hmm. like getting their products on credit, for instance.
Wow. Yeah, and it is it's mostly a cash society anyway, right?
It is a cash society, and you realize, for example, the way the charcoal ecosystem works is a micro entrepreneur who manufactures charcoal will give the micro entrepreneur who distributes it, let's say, 50 kilograms of charcoal in the morning and don't take any cash at that time. Then he or she will come back in the evening and collect back the cash, for example, after they've been able to sell it. So one of the things we've faced as a challenge is they've been telling them, okay, we can't give you the fuel on credit if you stock green char products.
Wow. Well, I guess that's that's kind of a good sign in a way. I mean, it's sad for the micro entrepreneur, but it's sort of a good sign because at least it means that you're scaling up enough that you're starting to be noticed.
Yeah, and it also creates more awareness, about what you're doing. Yeah. Because now people are asking questions.
Wow, I have so many questions for you, Tom. Just one real quick question. So when you went through Echoing Green and or Fledge, what were some of the benefits that came out of that? What are some things that why would someone want to go through one of those programs?
For Echoing Green, I think the main benefit that it gave me as a young entrepreneur was one, credibility, and second, a network community of like-minded individuals. You know, because you know, here was a young 18-year-old boy from Africa who is trying to build a business, and so already the odds were very much against me. You know, and so, for example, raising money was very hard because people are like, you don't have a track record of success. You don't have anyone else who's invested quite a considerable amount of money in your organization. When I got to Echoing Green, I could now say that Echoing Green are one of the pioneering people in the social entrepreneurship space. They believe in what I'm doing, and they've invested $80,000 in the organization. So it shows that someone else believes in what I'm doing. So that was very huge for me. At least it was able to take me to the next level. With Fledge, and the main thing that it helped me with, it helped me understand the A to Z of running like a social business. It helped me understand how to, manage my finances, how to come up with my business model and my business plan, how to talk to investors, how to pitch and present my organization, and how to deal with investors, like how to become investor ready and learn how to talk in a language that investors are able to understand. I think more specifically for a first-time social entrepreneur, I think fellowships and social conscious accelerators can really play a vital role in helping you get to the next level.
Excellent. Excellent. So, Tom, as you're growing in your business here, and there are others who are a little bit behind you, so they would like to be where you're at right now and facing the challenges you have, because your primary challenge are just frictions to growth. So, hiring enough people, getting enough product, scaling your enterprise, finding enough distributors. So you are, you're feeding the machine and you have this sort of flywheel of success going on right now. So a lot of people would love to be in that situation and to be facing the problems you have right now. So what's some advice you would have for new and aspiring social entrepreneurs?
For new and aspiring social entrepreneurs, my main advice to them is that in order to accelerate their growth, both as social entrepreneurs and the growth of their enterprises, they need to find a way of really embedding themselves within the community. Because the social enterprise space is still relatively small and young, and so it's a very small knit community. For example, as I've been listening to some of the previous episodes of the podcast, I've been impressed by how many social entrepreneurs who you've spoken to, who I personally know, and who I've connected to in the past. And so this community, it's a small community. Most people, the investors in the space, the mentors in the space, other entrepreneurs into the space. So if they can find a way of embedding themselves within this community, then it can really help accelerate their growth, because everything is so small and closely knit. But if you're really trying to affect positive social change, it will be very easy to get noticed within the space, to get mentorship and funding and support within the space.
Yeah, that's great. That is really good advice. Thanks for sharing that, Tom. So if someone wanted to find you and GreenChar on the web or on social media, where would they look?
You can visit our website. It's greencha.co.ke. You can also find us on Twitter at greenchakenya. I'm also on Twitter. My handle is at Tom Lee Osborne.
Excellent. And Tom, I'll put those in the show notes so it'll be easier for people to click through to you. So getting ready for that call to action from you, and if you have been listening to the Social Entrepreneur for a little while, you know this is the moment I usually take to just acknowledge my guest. And Tom, what I would acknowledge you for is there are so many things that I could say to you right now, but I want to focus on this. Is it's not about your youth, because someday you will not be young. So what you're doing isn't just impressive because you're young. What you're doing is impressive because it is impressive. You are making an impact. You're making a difference. You're changing, fundamentally changing an environment, and it's a massive addressable market. And so you are on a great path for a early stage social entrepreneur, and I just want to acknowledge you for making such a big difference now and a greater difference later.
Yeah, thank you very much for those kind words.
You're welcome. And Tom, what's one call to action for people who have been listening to Social Entrepreneur?
My main call to action to those who have been following this podcast and who are interested in the work that people are doing in this space is that they should see if they can go out of the way and help a social entrepreneur make a difference. You know, in my experiences and in my career thus far as a social entrepreneur, you know, I call in to be where I am today, why it's not for the very small, you know, sacrifices that other people have made for me. So, for example, if you listen to this podcast and you think that you know someone who can be of any help to any of the entrepreneurs who speak here, it would be very great to just reach out and make the introduction, for example, or just reach out and tweet or share the podcast and the stories that you hear here, you know, with other people, maybe your friends and your family, because you know it is only by sharing the stories about the work that we are doing can we be able to get enough momentum and enough traction to actually make a difference.
Well, thank you for that, and those are really kind words you've been saying too. So, Tom, thanks so much for being with us on Social Entrepreneur.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we provide Social Entrepreneur every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review Social Entrepreneur on iTunes. If you'd like the show notes for today, go to tonyloyd.com/050. That's TonyLoyd.com/050. While you're there, you're going to find our latest ebook, which is 5 Key Traits of Successful Social Entrepreneurs. You can also receive that via text message if you just text the word SOCENT to the number 44222. Well, listen, thanks for being with us again. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.